Auckland Grey Power is pleased to sponsor this edition of Senior Focus.
Well, good day. It's nice to be with you on a bright summer day. It certainly is that here in Auckland. And we are talking about transport issues again. Going to start talking about those little objects we see on our roads everywhere. They're orange. Some cities have had a lot more of them than others. In Christchurch, it was once said that you just could not take a photograph outside without a road cone being in it. It seems that just of late, things have got better. It's not surprising that there are a lot of road cones on our road. In fact, some people estimate there's over a million out on our streets at any given time. Between 150,000 and 250,000 road cones are sold into the New Zealand market each year. Now, that's a bit scary. Each one weighs about 5 kgs and has a 5-year lifespan. So that means, actually, a lot of them are going into the tip each year. Luckily, a company that makes a lot of them, Proline Plastics, do have a recycling program. So where did they come from? Well, there's a bit of controversy over who first invented them. But Charles D. Scanlon, he was an American and worked as a painter for the street painting department of the city of Los Angeles, where lots of good things come from. He was unimpressed by the traditional wooden tripods and barriers used to mark roads which were damaged or undergoing repainting. And he regarded these wooden structures as easily broken, hard to see, and a hazard to passing traffic. So his rubber cone was designed to return to an upright position when struck a glancing blow. And the patent for his invention was granted in, wait for it, 1943. They were first used in the United Kingdom in 1958. It's my birth date. There you go. Now you know. When the N6 motorway opened, and they were a substitute for the paraffin burners that were used up until then. But in 1961, David Morgan of Burford, maybe he hadn't heard about the ones on the M6, believes he constructed the first experimental plastic traffic cones. In the United States, on May the 1st, 1959, the Pacific Gas and Electric Company, now that's been very much in the news lately, shutting down power to stop fires in California, adopted the policy of placing these cones at the front and the rear of their service trucks while parked on the street. That was thought up by a Russell Storch, there's a great name, a cable splicer, and he was awarded the healthy sum of $45 for his suggestion. But we're not here to talk. Oh, mind you, one more story about traffic cones. I did read a little while ago about robotic traffic cones that swarm onto our highways. These have been developed a few years ago by Shane Farator. He was a roboticist, or is, at the University of Nebraska in Lincoln, in a bid to help to reduce the $100 billion per year that the Department of Transportation estimates is lost to the US economy through accidents and delays caused by highway lane closures. So what is a robotic traffic cone? Well, it's a little kind of three-wheeled motor that goes inside the cone, and they're deployed by a specially equipped truck from which an operator controls them using a laptop. Each fleet of robots is made up of a lead robot, or aptly named a shepherd, which is equipped with a global positioning satellite system, and they have a number of inexpensive dumb units which follow them out into the right spot. I just wonder what happened if a truck might run over those. Well, we're not here to talk about traffic cones all day. You may have heard about the recent tragedy in Christchurch where Pfeiffer Dawson, who was only 19, was killed last week riding through a work site where an overbridge is being built in the south of Christchurch. I've been reading through the New Zealand management, traffic management rules, and I believe they're really deficient when it comes to such tragedies, if we're still having them today. I'm also helping some friends, and I'm going to read out their email after an incident where their 10-year-old daughter collided with a car while riding through roadworks in South Auckland. Thursday morning, I delighted in my 10-year-old Ella. Our least enthusiastic cyclist was, for the first time, riding independently to school. She was happy and bright, unusually excited about getting on her bike. She came to me early, bright pink high-vis vest on, helmet at the ready, bike checked and ready to go. We've been cycling our children to school, weather and work schedules permitting, since we moved into the neighbourhood nearly 5 years ago. I'm an enthusiastic cyclist who loves mountain biking. My husband, an ex-road cyclist. We're committed to having an active, healthy lifestyle and children. Thursday afternoon, about 3:15 p.m, Ella, that's what we're calling her, collided with a motorist at the intersection of two roads near our home. She sustained a mid-shaft fracture to her clavicle. I will say the writer is a medic. Soft tissue injuries to her chest wall, hip, knee and ankle, as well as significant abrasions. Ella was transported to Middlemore by ambulance, where she had her uniform and high-vis vest cut away and remained in hospital for 24 hours, only discharged when the morphine had worn off. And little Ella is very upset today. She is not happy at all about riding to school anymore. And her parents have asked her their local councillor and people from Auckland Council to meet them at their school and to talk about the situation on the road. So clearly we had in that situation a road marking, a road cone problem, which confused poor little Ella and meant that she was riding where she shouldn't have been, and that meant this collision occurred. Well, we're going to take a little break and we're going to listen to some music now, and I hope you enjoy summertime.
good morning. There's nothing can harm you.
Summertime. I hope you are enjoying summertime around New Zealand as much as we are here. In July this year, I had the privilege of being in London, meeting with a number of folk there, cycling organisations, the Metropolitan Police, and a fellow called Michael Barrett. Now, Michael Barrett works for Transport for London, and he heads up what's called a development impact assessment team. And he works with developers and construction companies to ensure they can deliver what's needed to make sure people around those sites are safe. So by bringing together different types of road users, including cyclists, people with disabilities, together with the police, borough officers, construction companies and logistics experts, he enables immediate actions to be taken to improve London's roads for vulnerable road users. Now, he takes groups around the areas, and I went with him on a bicycle, a Boris bike, where construction was taking place. And he encourages everyone to see how improvements can be made, such as changing roadworks, traffic management layouts, signs and barriers. Now, the problem that little Ella had was that around this work site that she was cycling through, there was some signage suggesting where pedestrians and cyclists should go. The problem was that she misunderstood this and ended up going the wrong way, crossed a road sooner than she should have, so that when she came to the main road that she needed to get across to go home, she was actually difficult to see. Someone like Michael, as we rode around London, was looking out for exactly these kind of problems. Quite a trick to put yourself in the shoes of a 10-year-old person cycling, or an older person on a mobility scooter, or a young teenager on one of those dreaded e-scooters, and try to imagine just what they were thinking when they came upon a set of roadworks. Now, this work that Michael's done has been recognised. In fact, he got an MBE. And he's very passionate that everyone should be able to enjoy cycling around the capital safely. And a lot of people do, because I don't know if many of you have been to London recently, but travelling by car is really just not a great way to get around. And so a lot of people cycle or walk or use public transport there. And the Mayor of London was very, very proud of his work and his hard work and innovation that helped vulnerable road users across the capital. So that was a great experience, and I actually wrote this morning to our Associate Minister of Transport, Julian Genta, suggesting that perhaps they might invite Michael over here to talk to construction companies, civil construction companies doing roadworks, council officials, government officials, in order that some of the learnings that he has developed in London might be applied here, so that the tragedy that happened last week wouldn't happen again. We're going to listen to our next track of music, and again we have Ella Fitzgerald, and again I hope you enjoy this. Thank you. Isn't that just marvellous? Summery music on a great summer's day. Well, the success of Michael's work led him to set up a monthly roadwork patrols, which look at the issues that might affect potential road users and are open to all stakeholders. This could include local residents, police, borough officers, construction companies, logistics experts, as well as those that are actually out using the road. And by bringing everyone together, it seemed to be a lot easier for stakeholders who sometimes have differing interests and concerns to understand each other's point of view and reach a mutually beneficial compromise, which could include amending the roadworks, the traffic management layouts and the signs or the barriers. And so he applies the same ethos to the developer forums that he hosts, which brings the relevant stakeholders together to reduce the potential adverse aspects from development works. As well as bringing these creative and innovation ideas together and learn the lessons from others, they created a construction management guidance document, which was the first of its kind, alongside delivering his own training to construction site marshals. And by working intensively with construction sites, he's been able to help them reduce the amount of lorries around the sites by identifying suitable holding bays. We saw this when we were out riding. He would spot perhaps a construction site where, for whatever reason, things have been held up and there was nothing happening there, contact the owners and say, well, hey, is it possible that lorries that are delivering or taking away rubble or aggregate to a particular site could come in and just wait there until they were actually needed on the site? And this stopped lots and lots of trucks just sort of circling around waiting until they were called into the site. So during the ride, Michael was highlighting both the good and the bad practices while stressing the importance of considering the needs of all the road users. Key considerations included the security of the sites, accessibility, minimising the impact of lengthy diversions on vulnerable road users. Interesting, this morning, riding here, one of our local streets is being changed to allow buses to come down it. They've got some jutter bars at the moment, which they're going to make a lot longer. So they've effectively closed one of the streets. Now, in our area, that is the sort of, it's a big hill, and to get over that, that's the least steep choice that I have, which is still reasonably direct. So this morning I chose to slowly ride up the footpath, which I know is technically not right, but that was a great example of a road closure in one direction. It would have added another 10 or 15 minutes to my trip, which is a lot more than these things usually happen. Getting back to London, Michael Barrett is very well known. He's a bigger-than-life character. And he was known by the various site managers. And some of these guys were also characters. Often as not, they were cockneys, and they were shouting a lot and bossing people around and shouting at truck drivers. It was quite a high energy scene. But Michael had this wonderful way of just getting the best out of them and encouraging them to relook at their situation. And an example that we saw underway was a woman that lived locally in the area, and she was in a wheelchair, electric wheelchair. And as you know, some of those don't have great big wheels, quite small wheels, and very difficult to get across curbs unless they're nicely smoothly ramped. And close to where she lived, at the other side of this section of roadworks, was her church and her local shops. And effectively, that roadworks, the way it was originally designed, was actually going to stop her being able to get to church or get to her shops. And so, with a little bit of thought, the local, the construction company involved, and Michael and her, and some of her neighbours, were able to come up with some ideas that didn't stop traffic flowing, can't stop traffic flowing, that enabled the safe entry and exit of trucks into this building site, but it enabled her to be able to use her wheelchair in a safe and in a practical manner. Well, that was a great experience being in London, and I guess what I'd like to think, and I hope that my suggestion to bring Michael to New Zealand might be taken up. I'll let you know if that happens. The tragedy in Christchurch is something that's very close to my heart. As I've mentioned before, I manage what's called the Share the Road campaign, and we work with people that ride bicycles and people that drive trucks, and it was a truck that was involved in that incident there. And the truck was turning off the road into a work site when the collision occurred. And so we spend a lot of time working with truck drivers. We spend a lot of time working with cyclists. And I think it's fair to say that your average person is not aware of just the spots around a truck where it's difficult to see things that are coming up, particularly on the inside. That's the really tricky place for drivers to be able to know what's happening. Experienced drivers take this into account, and they will be checking their mirrors regularly. On a big truck, to look at your mirror, you have to turn your head right around and have a look very carefully, because objects can be very small in mirrors, as you know. I would hope that everyone listening today might just keep in mind that truck drivers have a job to do, and they're professionals, they do it very well, and yet there are challenges that we need to be aware of. And likewise, cyclists, we need to be looking over our shoulders all the time to see what's going on around us and be ready to slow down, take evasive action, or simply just wait. Hey, it's been great talking to you today about road cones, about how to make our parts of our roads with roadworks happening safer. And I hope that you are going to enjoy more sunny days like the one we're having today. Bye for now. Richard Barter. Thank you.
Get together with Senior Focus next Sunday at 5:25 p.m. on Planet FM 104.6, or listen online at any time at planetaudio.org.nz/Senior Focus. And do note, Senior Focus is